둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I'm just going to steal another pillow.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with It's the Interview Series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here for checking out the episode. Do hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. That way, you get three new interviews just like this one sent to you every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can grab us any of the usual spots, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating. Leave a review as well if you feel so inspired. Those always help out so much. We've had some incredible guests on lately. Kurtwood Smith was just here talking about the newest season of That 90s Show. Paul McCartney dropped by. Comedian Ali Sadiq, the band Wallows, Cleopatra Coleman, she's starring in Clipped on FX. Todd Rundgren was here. G-Eazy, Andrew McCarthy to talk about the Bratz documentary. Alexis Wren, who's starring in Latency. Kim Gordon of Sonic Youth. Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Jeff Daniels, Russell Crowe. Just an example of what you can get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, actor Anthony Michael Hall. You know him from such 80s classics like The Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, Weird Science. He has stayed busy through the years with The Dead Zone, The Dark Knight, Halloween Kills. He's back in a new Netflix revenge thriller called Trigger Warning, starring opposite Jessica Alba. Jessica plays a Special Forces commando who's on active duty overseas when she gets called back to her hometown with the tragic news that her father has suddenly died. Now the owner of the family bar, her character reconnects with her former boyfriend turned sheriff, played by Mark Webber, his hot-tempered brother Elvis, played by Jake Weary, and their powerful father, Senator Swan, played by Mr. Anthony Michael Hall, as she looks to understand what actually happened to her dad. Mike and I are going to talk all about this movie. He's going to tell us why he likes to play the villain, somewhat basing his character on Ted Turner, and what it was like to do big action and stunts with Jessica. He'll also talk about his own longevity in Hollywood, working with John Hughes on those 80s classics to the more recent projects like Reacher and a show he's developing with his buddy Robert Downey Jr. And he'll reveal why he wasn't in Andrew McCarthy's Bratz documentary. And we'll also look back on an album that he did in 1999. All that and more. We're talking Trigger Warning, out now on Netflix. It's Kyle Meredith with Anthony Michael Hall.
Hey, Kyle. Good to be with you, man. Thanks for having me.
It's always great to see you on the screen. It seems like you're a bit of everywhere these days, honestly, with everything that's going on. But this movie right here, Trigger Warning, I mean, big fun action movie. What, bit of a Rambo story, especially with that knife? Yeah.
You said that. A couple people mentioned that to me. Yeah. Yeah, it is a bit of a Rambo story. It reminds me of that a little bit. you know, it's also kind of a revenge thriller. It's a really great director I got to work with. Her name is Molly Suria, and she's from Indonesia, and she had done a film called Marlena the Murderer in 4X, which also was a female-driven kind of revenge thriller that she had done in her country about 6-7 years ago. So she's a very talented filmmaker, and I had an opportunity to meet and discuss the project with her, and she had watched my films growing up. I'm at that age now, Kyle, where I can I can work with filmmakers that might have been watching me as a kid. So I was very fortunate. She was a wonderful lady to work with, and we had a great team of women really running, you know, leading the show here. Two female producers, Esther and Erica, at Thunder Road. And Thunder Road brought us all the John Wick films. And then we had a great cinematographer, Zoe White. She did The Handmaid's Tale. So a lot of really great creative people and very talented actors. So it was a real pleasure to work on this, man.
Yeah. Well, it looks like you guys had a good time. Of course, you know, you playing this this senator, not the best of guys, not a good guy at all. Do you, you know, some people love to play the bad, the villain or whatever. Do you find that that's true for yourself?
I enjoy it. You know, I really do. It's fun. I think that it's kind of no holds barred and allows you to kind of let it all hang out, you know. And one thing I try to do when I am playing a darker character or a villainous character is to kind of inject some humor in there. And there was a funny thing. We were at the screening that Netflix hosted in Hollywood a couple of weeks ago. And there's that scene where I sit down with Jessica and I'm talking about Latinx and all this. And it's so funny because my wife and I and the audience were laughing because there's lines in that where my character just comes off like such an ass, like kind of a, you know, I think the first line of the scene is like, everybody in my town knows I'm not racist, you know, really funny stuff where he's like putting his own foot in his mouth, you know? So, and it's so funny because when I shot that scene, you're trying to remember your lines and we were kind of in a serious mood doing it, you know? And again, it was great to see that when I watched it with an audience and my wife, you know, that was actually funny right away. And it was actually a very humorous scene, which I didn't intend or think of. So, you know, it's nice. It's fun to play a darker character and the villains. I enjoy it, man.
That's some very, as they say, cringeworthy lines happening in that scene right there. And it did.
Cringy is the key to saying, right? Yeah. Yeah.
But like, we know those people. And especially when I'm looking at this sort of in the deeper way, you know, it's like I'm from a small rural town in Kentucky. Mm. Like you see the guns, you see the drugs, you see the way that, you know, these takes over people's lives. It almost, what I was thinking, it's like it makes forgotten people feel powerful in a way.
That's a very impressive statement. No, you're right. It's interesting. I mean, certainly a career politician. One of the things I try to do is give it a little bit of color. I kind of wanted to give him this kind of nebulous Southern background, and you can appreciate that being from Kentucky. But it was interesting, you know, when you make a project, you know, you stay open to the collaborators. And one of the things that really helped me was actually the costume designer. When I got to the set, she had a vision board for my character, like good costume designers always do. They have their work planned out and they're thinking of colors and this and that. And she was pulling photos from like Ted Turner in the early 80s, you know, this kind of like really wealthy American guy that'll like choose to live in the Southwest and not really a cowboy, but kind of acts like one, you know. And so it was interesting, you know, that helped it too. That informed the process. Being in Santa Fe, New Mexico was a lot of fun. That kind of breathes life into it. You know, we have a really talented costume department. They gave me the look of the character. So all those things you kind of incorporate and you kind of just add them on to what you're doing, and it inspires you. It's fun. You know, I enjoyed it.
Filming in New Mexico, as you said, like how much does the landscape do the work? Like is that something you feel when you come on the set?
Oh, definitely. You know, what I do is I typically in my contract, I ask for a car and I would self-drive to sets, and, you know, we'd often be 30, 40 miles outside of Santa Fe, which is actually a small little town in New Mexico. And we have these, yeah, they're interesting, very remote locations. And again, that's just another element. You can kind of breathe that in. It really, you see it on screen. It really has a beautiful look to it. And it has kind of a Western feel too at this story, you know? So yeah, I think all those things help. And I enjoy that. And I like that quiet time as I'm getting to work to kind of take in the atmosphere. Yeah.
It's the great parts about a job like this. You know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it's so funny you mentioned that, Kyle, because I often point that out to people, that sense of adventure, you know, the idea ever since I was a kid, you know, I'd get a job and all of a sudden, you know, you'd have your plan and you get on a plane and you wind up in some town and, you know, that, you know, you're just in a new place. And I think that feeds the work too, you know, that sense of creating from a new place. It's fun.
And we'll be right back right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Anthony Michael Hall.
Now, how is Jessica Alba as a scene partner?
She was great to work with, man. Very professional. You know, she had a big background with action, obviously, with the Robert Rodriguez films and Dark Angel. So she, it was very important for her that that aspect of it was executed well. And of course, Thunder Road is known for that. They did the John Wick series. They're great. So that level of action is really impressive. And Jessica was right there in the trenches. I mean, she really knows her stuff, you know, in terms of the fight coordination and the scenes. And it was important to her that we all execute well. And we did, you know. And we also had the inclusion of the 8711. And they're like a top stunt organization that did all the John Wick films. So, you know, those levels were really great to see, just that kind of professionalism with that department. It was really great. And it added another level to the, another dimension to the film. Cause when we would do the stunt stuff, obviously the fight coordinators would come in with the team and they had obviously pre-visualized all that and worked that out. So when we got to set, the stunt team was there for like 5 or 6 weeks already. So they were really top notch. One of the best I've ever worked with.
Yeah. I know she does most of the fighting, but do you have to go through a little battle training as well?
Well, I get to be an older guy in this one. So I get my ass kicked a little bit by Jessica, but I leave the action for the younger crowd, but I'm down for it, man. I'm ready for it. You know, here I am at 56, but it was really funny. I think she actually ad-libbed that line. She says it to Jake Weary in the scene, who plays my son Elvis in the film. She's like, if you put a little more weight on your back foot, you wouldn't punch like such a bitch. I'm like, you know, I think she actually ad-libbed that. That shows you the level of Miss Alba or Mrs. Alba. Yeah, she's very intense. She's into it, you know. But that was great to see, too, because she comes game face ready. You know, she was really into her role. And obviously, as one of the producers, it was important that all the elements are there. And it was a great project.
What I was about to say, I mean, you're finding yourself still in plenty of action-centered, you got Reacher. I think you're part of the, like, that world's in there. How much you actually think about genre when you're looking at your next jobs?
You know, I don't. I remember reading an article years ago about Michael Caine, and at that point in his career, he was like, I think I pick things based on where they're going to be shot. I'd like to get to that luxurious place in a career. But, you know, I think often actors maybe, you know, I guess the image can be presented. I won't name names, but by certain people that this was all planned, you know, you kind of go where the work is. I remember I worked with Danny Trejo on an action picture Western that me and he and Mickey Rourke started about 10 years ago. And that was actually something that Danny Trejo said to me. He goes, Mike, I'm like a mechanic. I go where the work is. I went, duly noted there, Mr. Trejo. I like that. And I feel that way too, you know, so it's fun. Reacher was a great show to work on. I was up in Toronto for the last year because of the strike. We had a little bit of a break there, but a great show to be a part of. Really another show where the action is really intrinsic to the value of the show. And they were always stepping it up and really kind of pushing the envelope on that. So that was a fun show to be a part of too, man. I really had a good time on that.
That's what I'm saying, though. It's like you're still so part of so many cool things. You know, talking every now and then with actors who have had the luxury, had the fortunate to have a career, you know, a longevity career. It's like, what's the secret? Like, I'm sure that's the unanswerable question. Like, what have you learned to be able to stay in the game this long when so many others have been shuffled off?
It's a great question. Well, I just thank God. I mean, I think first for me personally, at the foundation is my faith, you know, having a belief and having a faith and a structured, you know, a system of belief for me, being tenacious, you know, at a certain point, I think it's important to become unstoppable, you know, in your own mind to make that decision. Like, no one's going to take this from me. I'm going to keep doing this. And when I was a young kid working with John Hughes, Kyle, I remember processing that, kind of having that inner monologue with myself, just about what it meant to me. And that with the gratitude and the excitement of success as a kid that I had, I knew that I wanted to hang in there. You know, it's actually something I wrote a script years back with Robert Downey and his father. And Downey Sr. was notorious for his great puns, you know, and he had one which was right on with my name. He said, in the long haul, the short one won't make it. And that was a Downey Sr. line. So, you know, I just have been tenacious and I've had kind of a workman's attitude about it. You know, you have to treat it. It's like my sport, you know, or if you're in corporate or whatever it is, you know, to build success over time, you have to humble yourself. You have to learn how to work in teams, right? You have to be open to the process and just be tenacious. So I think that was, you know, some of the things that I've kept in mind over the years, you know, just to keep at it.
What I see with you and Downey, Singularity?
Yeah, it's a TV show we've been developing for a number of years now. And unfortunately, what happened very much by accident, Kyle, is it started to mirror Succession. because we were creating a comedy about a family, and I was going to be like the black sheep son, and I had two brothers. It's really eerie how it happened. And the father was sort of a technocrat, industrialist, you know, and without planning it, it was completely by accident. Succession took off, and we were like, oh shit, okay, well, that's a great show. We can't go there. So we had to regroup, and Robert and his wife, Susan, are great friends, and they recently brought in a great guy. He happens to be married to Gwyneth Paltrow. His name is Brad Falchuk. So we're hoping to you know, start taking it to some streamers and networks soon. Brad has a great vision for it. And, you know, we had a really cool creative call about it a couple months ago when I was in Toronto shooting Reacher. So I'm hopeful that that we can put it together now. And it's a fun project. And I love Dowdy. I'm so proud of his growth. And Susan's a huge part of that. You know, she really, as evidenced in his awards circuit tour this year with Oppenheimer, he did a great job. But she really has been instrumental in, you know, just loving my friend, being a great wife. But she's also a phenomenal producer. So they've done great work together. I'm very proud of both of them.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Anthony Michael Hall.
Of course, the Bratz documentary came out last week, and I thought, why weren't you in it? Why didn't I see you?
You know what's so funny? I haven't seen it yet, so I can't really speak to it, but I've met Andrew at some of the signings. I do Comic-Con signings, and I met him last year. He's a great guy. I really enjoyed talking with him. I opted not to do it because I'm always making new stuff and moving forward, and I'm just sort of a forward-thinking person. So the truth is I've had to embrace those films, and I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you without John Hughes. So it's not like something new to me to discuss that era of those films, because I wouldn't be here without John Hughes, you know. So it's important for me that I always tip my hat to him and I acknowledge him. And he was a great guy. I mean, he was like my best friend. We were great buddies, you know, even though there was a 20-year age gap. So when I started working with John, he was 35, I was 15. I guess we were both 35, or he was 15 at 35. We really hit it off. And I loved working for him. I mean, what he did for me, he did for so many of us. I mean, he was just such an important writer, director. I also think one of his God-given gifts was that he was just very collaborative, very open to that. He had a great ear. So beyond just his writing and direction, he was very collaborative. And your performance was something that was an ongoing, you know, creation that you would work on with him. And he was really cool that way. So if you had an idea, we would typically shoot scenes like two or three or four takes the way is written. And then he would say, try something else, you know, or if we had an idea, he'd say, try that. You know, he was amazing that way. He really was.
That's where the good jazz happens right there.
Right on, man. Well said.
Yeah. You had mentioned in an interview that he had actually considered a Breakfast Club sequel. Like, do you know what that would have looked like? I can't imagine what that would have looked like.
It's interesting because the last time I spoke to John, sadly, was about, I remember it being around 1988, 89. I had just done a film called Johnny Be Good, which was just okay. And he called me one day.
He's got some fans? Come on.
Yeah, no, it's fun. Yeah. I broke my dick, coach. I think I ad-libbed that one. Anyway, you know, it's funny because, so John Hughes called me with John Candy on the phone, Kyle. It was amazing. And we just kind of hung out for a couple hours on the phone talking about all kinds of stuff. But it was at that point that he did mention The Breakfast Club. It was interesting to him, and he was playing with the idea of doing a sequel at that point. I mean, it's a long time ago already, but I think it was interesting for him to follow up and see where they were in their professional lives, and did they reconvene, and how would they interact at that point if they were in the workforce and, you know, so-called adults at that point, you know. So I know it was something that he was thinking about, but sadly, we lost him too early. You know, he was only 60 when he died. You know, and now that I'm 56, it's too young to die. Yeah.
Well, it is still nice getting those moments. Seeing you in the class with my buddy Debbie Gibson, it gives a little bit of that. You know, a little bit of that.
Yeah. Well, I have a production company, Manhattan Films, and we produced two films in the last 3 years. I'm very proud of. The Class was one of them, and as you know, it was like an homage to the Breakfast Club. It was written by a writer director named Nick Solozzi. And Debbie did a beautiful job. She plays a drama teacher who kind of sets them on their course that day. They're all in detention for another reason. And she says, you have to come up in front of the class and present a character. And then the walls start coming down there. But I was very impressed with his script, Nick, and also the performances of all the kids in the film. They did a great job. And I think what was interesting is in a modern context to raise the stakes, that all the situational things that they were going through were very current and very real. And in a lot of ways kind of transcended what we had done 40 years ago. So I thought I was very proud of the film. And we have another movie called Roswell Delirium, which is soon to be released, another indie. It's been doing great on the festival circuit. It's won about 50 awards already. And that's directed by a writer director named Rick Bakewell. So I've been developing my company, growing Manhattan Films. I have a couple projects in the works, and one that I'm set to star in and I want to direct. So yeah, just moving and grooving and building out here.
There's that longevity again right there. That's
yeah, man. Yeah. It's important. I mean, that's something that I had my eye on even as a kid. I really did. So I thank God, you know, that I've had a creative life and that I've been able to work in this industry as long as I have. And it's not lost on me, man. It really is appreciated, and I'm grateful for everything.
Yeah, I've been seeing you talk about the awards for Roswell Delirium. I'm really looking forward to checking that one out. I did want to bring up, though, because you've done a little bit of music in your past. Do you play at all these days?
You know, I haven't in a while, but I had an album project that I did back in 99, and it was called Hall of Mirrors. Welcome to the Hall of Mirrors. And at that point, to be very honest, Kyle, I had struggled through my 20s getting work, and it was just kind of like a self-taught thing. I played guitar and started writing songs, and it just came to me. I said, you know what? I want to make an album. And so I was very proud of it. I work with different producers, and stylistically it's all over, you know, different directions. You know, some of it's a little funk inspired. Some of it was a little more pop dance. You know, it was interesting. I did a bunch of different stuff on that, but it's been a while, but I love music. You know, it's always been a very important part of my life, like many of us. And so I love it.
25th anniversary edition. That's what I'm saying. That's
yeah.
You need a re-release of the album.
Right on. Right on.
Mike, it's so good to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time. I love seeing your trigger warning. Can't wait to see all the rest of the stuff we've been talking about as well. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, likewise, man. Good being with you today, and thanks for the time.
My thanks. Anthony Michael Hall, Trigger Warning is out now on Netflix. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Please do hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. Again, that way you'll get three new interviews sent to you just like this one. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Give the series a rating. Please do leave a review while you're at it. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. In fact, one of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Bob Seger, Question and the Mysterians, Jay Somm, Pearl Jam, Counting Crows, The Smashing Pumpkins, Wilco, Feist, My Morning Jacket, The Marías, Simon and Garfunkel, Melanie, Linda Ronstadt, and my interview with Brandon Flowers, the frontman of The Killers. Again, just an example of what you can hear every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern when you listen in at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, yeah, okay. Rather than look at myself. Thanks.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Public Media.